good morning. Talk to Talk of Alaska. Today we're talking about the fuel cost squeeze in rural Alaska. I'm Nellie Moore sitting in for Steve Heimel. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, a statewide call-in, and we'll be back in just a few moments and we'll introduce our guests, so stay with us.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. If you're an artist who expresses yourself creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance, you may be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Awards grant. You can learn more online at rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Good morning to all the stations in Alaska listening to Talk of Alaska this morning. I'm your host, Nellie Moore, filling in for Steve Heimel today. I have three guests in the studio. We're going to be talking about the fuel cost squeeze in rural Alaska, and we hope all of you will join in. We're very interested in hearing how things are going in your part of Alaska, as well as whatever your experiences may be in the urban areas. My guest today from Juneau on the telephone, Joe Balash, Special Assistant to Governor Palin. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure.
And on the past, you have worked on energy issues. You're more generically a Special Assistant working on wider topics, but we thank you for your expertise today. Sue Brogan is here in the studio. She's Vice President of Community Engagement at United Way of Anchorage. Thanks for being here, Sue.
You're welcome.
Sue will be talking about the 2-in-1 system and informing us on how that can help in some ways. Also here, Mira Kohler, Executive Director of the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, AVEC, as most people in rural Alaska call it. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Nellie.
Joe, we're in the middle of, or actually we're in the extended middle of a fuel cost squeeze in rural Alaska. Some places are faring better than others. We're hearing of hearings out there and things that the state may be doing at this point. Can you kind of give us a thumbnail of what's going on as far as the state administration is concerned with that issue?
Sure. The first thing I'd say is that it is a very difficult time for many communities in rural Alaska. Due to the seasonal nature of delivery by barge of fuel, many communities bought their winter load at the peak of the price spike that we all experienced last year. And so those tanks are fill and filled with the more expensive and most expensive diesel to ever be sold. And they're having to live with that burden day in and day out through the winter, whereas many other parts of Alaska on the road system and elsewhere are benefiting to the extent that prices have dropped. And what we understand the situation to be in many parts is that the fuel situation is a challenge created by price as opposed to physical availability. And one of the things that we are focused on, particularly in the situation out in Mnemonic, is trying to make sure that citizens and residents are availing themselves of all of the various forms of cash assistance available to them, whether it be for rent, for food, for medical, so that they free up cash that can then be used to purchase their fuel, and for those individuals and families that are able to qualify for the fuel assistance programs that already exist and are in place, that they are able to get the necessary forms filled out and the various forms of assistance awarded. So those are the primary issues we're focusing on right now. The governor's new rural advisor, John Moeller, is going to be heading out to Western Alaska next week and getting another assessment directly for the governor.
Mm-hmm. And as far as getting all these forms filled out and finding out about these programs, how do people get access to those forms? I mean, are there mass mailings, or how do they get them?
Well, many of them are available online. Some you can be made available at, whether there be a local LIO or village council office, but they're not always well known. They're not always something that people are used to turning to. It's only in these tight times that they've gotten to the point that they're willing to accept particular forms of assistance, and there is a need to get out and make sure that the word gets out and that citizens are able to avail themselves of the assistance that's already available.
Okay, you are listening to Talk of Alaska this morning. We're discussing the fuel cost squeeze in rural Alaska. I'm Nellie Moore, filling in for Steve Heimel. My guest today in the studio, Mira Kohler, Executive Director of the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, or AVEC, Sue Brogan from United Way, and on the phone, Joe Balash, Special Assistant to Governor Palin. As I said, this is a live call-in program. Our call-in number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. And if you're calling from Anchorage, it's a local number. You can dial 550-8422. That's 550-8422. Or you can email me at talk@APRN.org. And we've got all kinds of people here waiting to answer the phone. So give us a call. We'd like to hear how things are going in your village. We've got some people here who are going to share some information that we're very anxious to hear. Mira Kohler from AVEC, you tell us, first of all, how many plants AVEC has out there, and just describe the system a little bit for people who aren't familiar with it.
AVEC is a cooperative. We're a nonprofit cooperative owned by the membership. We serve 53 villages that are scattered throughout Alaska. We serve several villages in the Nana region, as far north as Kivalina. We have a community on Kodiak Island, which is Old Harbor. We serve the islands, the island of St. Lawrence. So we have Gamble and Savunga in the west, and we have one system on the road, and that's Minto.
Wow.
So we can actually get there by road. Minto and Old Harbor are the only communities that have year-round access to fuel. So we don't actually have bulk fuel storage there for more than a few months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
In all the other villages, we typically have 13 to 14 months of storage, because you can't afford to run out of fuel when there's no barge available. But we have 48 power plants and 48 tank farms to serve those 53 villages. So there are five villages that are connected to other villages. So we have, for example, a single plant in Tuxuk Bay that serves Tanunuk and Nightmute as well, and a single one in Kasiglik to serve Nanapachuk. So there are economies of scale to be had over there. But nonetheless, we don't sell a lot of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
We sell only about half as much electricity in all 53 villages as the utility does in Bethel. So our economies of scale are very, very low.
Very, very strange. I mean, it's a system that's pretty – is it unique to Alaska, or are there other systems that you know in the United States that are similar?
The cooperative model is one that is found all over the country. In
mm-hmm.
fact, it's found pretty much all over the world. But we are unique in that we serve communities that aren't connected to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So in the lower 48...
Road system.
Yeah, you would serve a single community or maybe two that are connected together. So, for example, in Naknek, there's a co-op, and it serves King Salmon, South Naknek, and Naknek.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be there. But they're connected, whereas our 53 villages are typically not connected. So you have to have a standalone power plant for every single community.
You are listening to Talk of Alaska. It is a live call-in program. Our toll-free this morning is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. Before we go to Sue, we're going to go quickly now to Southeast Alaska and Heidelberg. Steve, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Heidelberg has no bulk fuel place. and we're on the end of a highway called the Heidelberg-Hollis Highway. It runs to Klock and Craig. We get our fuel from Craig, Alaska, and the delivery truck is delivering the fuel is outrageous. We get one fuel truck comes down. If they miss you, you know, then you're put off for a while, and sometimes they can't get through the road because of the ice and snow. And excuse me. Well, one thing I'm concerned about is people with disabilities and handicaps, Social Security, are on fixed incomes who depend on this energy assistance. and the people who are handicapped and disabled are kind of stuck in a hole. You know, they apply for energy assistance, and when it gets delivered, I don't know, you know, it costs so much to deliver, the cost of delivering it and bringing the fuel on here is outrageous. And
so you see the cost, the cost for you then is the issue to people,
yes,
on fixed income?
And the people with disabilities who need to be serviced by fuel to get this energy assistance, and it's frustrating sometimes.
Okay, thanks for your call, Steve. I wanted to ask Joe Balash in Juneau. This is a continuing theme in this whole energy issue for rural Alaska. Any thoughts you want to share with Steve? I know you've talked about everybody getting on as many programs as available as possible, but do you have any suggestions for Steve?
I'm, as we speak, trying to find my way through and identify where specifically the various forms are for energy assistance programs. There are a variety of them. The easiest one to participate in is power cost equalization. On the heating fuel side of things, there is the federal program operated by the Department of Health and Social Services, the LIHEAP program, and then as part of the legislation that passed in the special session last summer, there's now a state energy assistance program, and I'm working on finding my way here in just a minute. And
okay.
Maybe I'll be able to come back with a specific web link or site to direct people to.
Okay. We'll come back to that. Sue Brogan from United Way. Let's talk a little bit about the 2-1-1 system. It's an interesting program, and it's got some years behind it now. So let's explain what that is.
Okay. Thank you. Alaska 2-1-1 launched in 2007, and it's a free and confidential information and referral helpline all over the state. You can call 2-1-1, and specifically to speak a little bit to Joe's point, we've been working a lot the last year with the state heating assistance programs, answering calls from not only rural Alaska, but, you know, in the urban areas, how to access this information. And what 2-1-1 really is, it's a statewide system. When somebody calls, you can talk to a live person, an information referral specialist, and the value, I think, and the beauty of this particular system is that it's a brainstorming opportunity. So, for instance, you have limited resources and you do need to, you know, pay rent and buy food and you know, pay those things that we all do to live and exist in our state. And you run short. Well, the information and referral specialist can brainstorm with you to say, okay, why don't you pay your rent and we'll give you information on where food pantries are located. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, okay, I'm having heating assistance issues. They can access the database and they can give you information on some of these forms and how to access the forms and, you know, some of the rules and the nuances behind these particular programs. The state does do a great job of keeping that information updated, and our information referral specialists can access it. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful partnership, kind of to enhance what Joe was talking about. And we have been around a year and a half, and our call volume right now is the highest that it's ever been.
What about people who don't have internet access?
Well, you can, I was talking to Mira earlier, you can dial 211 in almost every part of the state. And through technology, it actually routes to a 1-800 number and then back down to a local number here in Anchorage. But if you don't have 211 access, there is a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-478-2221. So I would really encourage people to call that are having challenges out there, because we're here to, you know, to provide that assistance with information or referral.
Mm-hmm. Mira, I'm very interested to find out, people out there all across the country are struggling. People are losing their homes. People are having trouble buying fuel to go out there and look for jobs, pay their bills. And it's the same for people in the villages, but there are a lot less jobs out there to be had. How is this impacting your organization? How is AVEC doing financially, and how does it keep from going down the toilet?
Well, hopefully we won't come to that situation where we actually have to flush ourselves away. But it seems like people are making choices as to how they are to take care of their obligations. And for the most part, we haven't seen a huge increase in delinquencies by residential consumers. We do actually have a couple of non-residential consumers that are extremely large balances. And I know that what that means is that those cities are having a hard time making ends meet. So my big concern is with the governing bodies in those communities. I think that they're having a really hard time covering their cost of operations. And so they are letting their electric bills slide. We don't usually put a huge amount of pressure, especially during the winter. You know, you had asked me earlier about whether we disconnect during the winter. And although we legally can, we don't have anything in our tariff that prohibits disconnecting somebody for non-pay during the winter. As a practical matter, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
During my 9 years with AVEC, the only instance I remember where we disconnected somebody in the winter was when we disconnected the old school in Chivac. And you might remember that from 2005. There was a bit of a flap over that. But no, we don't go out and do that during the winter.
Uh-huh.
We try and work with our customers to try and bring them home.
Mm-hmm. And even here in Anchorage, I had heard on another talk show, an elderly woman called in and said that she had been cut off here in Anchorage. And what they did for a couple of months was to use electric heaters in their home. So, you know, it sounds like people are having a difficult time everywhere, and just doing these really expensive means to, you know, skip bills and, you know, just trying to juggle their money around. This is a live call-in program. If you're listening, give us a call. Tell us how things are going in your community. Talk of Alaska is available at radio stations all over the state. 1-800-478-8255 is our toll-free, or 1-800-478-TALK, and you can also call here in Anchorage, 550-8422, or you can email at talk@aprn.org. We are going to go to the phones now, and William in Fairbanks, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Yes, good morning. I'm wondering whether or not these high prices for fuel has changed the attitude somewhat for hooking up some of these villages to the road system. The fabled road to Nome would provide surface transportation to, about 10 or 15 some villages. But in the past, there seemed to be a lot of resistance to it. I guess largely people think, well, there'd be road hunters from Anchorage and Fairbanks come and shoot all the game. But I'm wondering, have attitudes changed towards being connected to the road system? And the second question is, I had seen that it had been proposed to build a regional electric generation facility, I think in the middle Kuskokwim, which would service the proposed mines in that area, and the local villages would benefit from a reduced cost of electricity. Here in Fairbanks, the Fort Knox gold mine and the Pogo mine, they utilize immense amounts of electricity, over a third of the capacity here in the Fairbanks area. So I'm wondering if you could address those two questions. And the final one is the proposed electric battery system or generation cell that had been proposed for Galena. What's the state of play on that? I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Okay. Thank you, William. I wanted to very interesting question about the attitudes about roads, and hopefully Joe might know something about this. All of my life, living in rural Alaska, there has been a lot of opposition to roads for the game reason and other things, people concerned the cost of maintenance. And I think one of the reasons that this becomes a really hot topic is because the villages of Noatak and Kivalina have been really hard hit by this issue, of course, and I believe some of them have access now to the fuel that's stored at the port of Red Dog. So people in Noatak are able to jump on their snow machines with some empty drums, drive over to Red Dog and get fuel and stove oil, I guess. I'm not sure if it's both or one or the other, which has been a huge help. I talked to a gentleman from Noatak the other day, which does raise the issue of roads. Joe, are you hearing people talking more about connecting some of these communities to help alleviate some of these problems other than by air?
Well, we've heard a little bit, and I would characterize it more as a softening rather than as an embrace of additional roads and access. Many of the same concerns that have been present previously remain, but there is a growing acknowledgement that, you know, there might be something that can be done to both improve access and availability to energy specifically. And so to the extent that we're able to identify corridors for transportation and surface transportation in particular, we also want to keep our eye on the ball with regard to energy transmission, be it power lines, pipelines, or what have you. So very much a part of the thinking that goes on in planning for large-scale or intermodal-type transportation. But one of the potential solutions that is out there that may be able to offer both access but also limit access in a controlled manner is the use of rail as opposed to open highway. Rail systems are generally able to be more efficient than, say, heavy haul trucks and trailers. That's not always the case. Sometimes it's the case. And when you're talking about large mines in particular, efficient transportation of supplies in and product out are a big part of the equation. So we continue to look at those things as we think about ways to open up Alaska in terms of routes into resources and also access for the communities in a manner that they're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, and I just want to quickly touch on something before we move on to the callers who are coming in pretty quickly. Right now, we just talked a little bit ago that our attorney general is resigned here in the state. The president is out stumping for his revitalization plans. There is a huge battling going on in Washington, D.C. over this. How pertinent is this problem for the governor's office that's happening in rural Alaska with all of these other huge issues going on?
Well, it's never a dull day in the office of the governor, I can tell you that much. And today is also one of those kinds of days where we woke up this morning expecting one set of challenges to be confronting us and have some additional ones. But the fact remains we have the obligation and responsibility to deal with them and deal with them all, and we do the best that we can as they come at us. And as far as the issues presented both here in Alaska and in Congress, we've been working hard to keep up on the changing rules regarding the stimulus package in terms of how it was going to be put together, come together, and ultimately be...
Could that be a possible help in this situation? I mean, could the state be looking at alternative means of delivering fuels and energy products using that system? It doesn't sound like it, that's taking place or occurring. It seems like we continue to fight these infrastructure problems.
Well, infrastructure remains a huge challenge, both in terms of distance and the size of the particular market being served. But there may be some opportunities. There are various federal programs that are already in place and on the books, and that appears to be at least part of the direction that Congress and the administration are headed. What we continue to be mindful of is, you know, any strings that come associated with stimulus dollars that Washington D.C. is potentially making available to states is what sort of continuing and future obligations that's going to carry.
Yeah.
We still have our own revenue situation that we need to be mindful of and keep our eye on the ball with.
Sure. Okay, this is a live call-in program. We're going to go to those calls now. 1-800-478-8255 is the toll-free here in Anchorage. It's 550-8422, and we'll catch up on the email here in just a minute. We're going to go, first of all, to Tom in Anchorage on line 4. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I was hoping to address the methodology that AEA put forth in its recent rural energy report, in that it doesn't seem to be a comprehensive assessment of the needs of rural communities. In a large part, there are other problems besides just the sheer present-day cost of energy that should be considered as a statewide policy. One of them is that the cost of imported fuels drains these communities of sorely needed revenues and dollars, and to the extent that biomass in the form of willows, garbage, and or sewage can be used to use local labor and local resources, it would substantially assist those communities in sustainability. That in combination with wind is probably the long-term way to go, and although that these technologies may be technically complex, it would behoove us to invest in technical teams to assist communities in maintenance of these complex generation facilities. In particular, one comes to mind of a TGER, tactical garbage to energy refinery, that produces wood pellets, garbage pellets and alcohol to fire, garbage pellets that are gasified and alcohol to fire generators, that allows for production of, you know, pellets that can be used in stoves and for heating, alcohol that can be used for heating, and syngas that can be used for heating and generation. So you have multiple fuel sources. You have the ability to back up wind generators as well in the mix, and those will provide for long-term sustainability of communities because it uses local resources and local labor.
Okay, Tom. I know some of these things have been talked about. I know I've seen some things about possibly using willows because there's billions of them out there, but we don't know how sustainable that would be. Mira, have you heard of anything at this point that is going to help us in the short term? And is AVEC looking at other means of power generation?
AVEC actually has taken a leadership role in developing wind resources in our communities. We have the largest utility wind generation fleet in the state. And in fact, last year we won a national award for Wind Cooperative of the Year. And we've demonstrated an extremely high penetration of wind, specifically in Tuxuk Bay, where we are serving three communities and essentially replacing about 25% of their diesel with wind energy. And we think that that is part of the wave of the future. We believe that we have wind resources in the state, and by developing those and connecting communities together, we can actually get a lot of value out of those. So we have a very aggressive development schedule to develop wind in about 30 of our villages, and we hope to displace 25% of all of the diesel fuel that we use every year with wind within the next few years. Mm-hmm. And we've, in fact, presented a fairly substantial package to our congressional delegation, well over $150 million for wind projects and interties to start connecting communities and to tap those resources. I think wind has some real viable options out there. In terms of garbage and biomass, that is local. If you have a large enough community with a large enough resource, then that potentially has some value there. But most of our villages don't have those resources, so that's not viable.
Okay, Mira Kohler from AVEC, thank you very much. You are listening to Talk of Alaska. Today our topic is the fuel cost squeeze in rural Alaska. We'll be right back as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN, covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Nellie Moore filling in today for Steve Heimel. We're talking about fuel and energy issues in the bush today. I want to read a comment quickly before we get to Nick on the phone. Concerning energy costs in the bush, we live in rural southeast Alaska in Tanakee Springs. Glad to hear from you. To be exact, we're lucky that we were able to get a fuel barge every 4 months or so. Our last barge saw fuel prices drop almost a dollar a gallon across the board, but we're still paying 65 cents a kilowatt hour for electricity, although for residential customers, there is a power cost equalization program, which takes a big bite, but PCE does not cover our businesses, which is burdensome. But all in all, he says, I would not want to live anywhere else. That's definitely a strong statement there. And, of course, Mira Kohler from AVEC has talked about some of the things that they're doing, particularly with wind right now, to look at alternative energy. We're going to go back to the phones now and try to get caught up on that. On line 7, Jason from Cake, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm calling here from Cake, Alaska, and we have a lot of the same problems here. The problem is with the assistance programs is what it does is it makes the power affordable for people that don't have money, but the people that do have money or, you know, have jobs in other spots that are trying to live in this community, it drives them out of the community because, you know, the price of electricity is 45 cents a kilowatt, and, you know, the price of goods is high. And the assistance programs, like I said, address that, but they don't address the fact that for the community to make it, you've got to have money in the community. Nobody's going to have anything unless the people in the community have some money to spend. And the only way to draw people in with money in the community is to make the goods and the price of fuel and everything lower. Around here, we have lots of tidal action. You know, we can run electricity that way. There's hydroelectric dams that could be linked together. There's plenty of ways to solve it. There's just no infrastructure being put forth to solve it. And I guess that's all I got to say.
Jason, are people, yeah. We asked Joe Balash a little earlier if people are kind of changing their opinions about roads into communities where none exist now. Do you think that that could possibly be the case eventually for Cake? I mean, to try to improve.
It could become a suburb, just like any other town can become a suburb anywhere. But you need access by ferry system. You need the price of goods to be low enough, or at least the price of fuel and the price of electricity to be low enough that people can viably live there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because the price of housing is quite a bit lower than here at Juneau or Sitka, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you could become, if people that work in jobs where they go for 2 or 3 weeks one spot and then come back, they could be drawn into these communities. Because they are nice communities, and the price of housing is lower, the demand on land is lower, but you can't draw them in unless we have some infrastructure. So it feels almost as if the Alaska government is trying to strangle the community down here and kill them off so they don't have to support them, instead of working towards a way of not just supporting by welfare, but by supporting by industry and supporting by, self. I don't know about melting down garbage, but,
Okay, Jason.
You can't get industry here unless you have the price down that somebody can actually build something here and go into the world and sell it and be competitive.
Sure. We sort of touched on that earlier with Joe Balash and Juno, but I guess, Jason, your point's well taken about jobs. I know there are just a huge bunch of issues that surround this topic. We've said, we need to get our rural kids into college, and they need to succeed, and they need to get a degree, and they need to come home and work. Well, when they come home, there is no job. There are no jobs except for what might be at the school, or maybe at AVEC's power plant, or at the water plant, at the clinic possibly. So this is something I think that people are going to have to pull together very soon if rural Alaska is to be well and continue to provide a good life for people. Mira, I know we've talked a lot about reducing power costs, but what are some things that people can do in the home that AVEC might be able to disseminate information about that could help?
Electricity usage in rural Alaska is very, very modest. In our average residential home, the consumer only uses about 390 kilowatt hours a month, which is about half of what you use here in urban Alaska. So they are already very conservative. One of the things you'd mentioned earlier, and it is something that I worry about, is that during the winter when folks can't afford to buy 10 gallons of fuel to run their Toyo stove, they actually turn the oven on and open the door.
Yep.
And when you try and use the oven to heat your home, you're going to pay a fortune for that heat. Now, admittedly, you don't have to pay for it for a couple of months, but it's not a good answer. So folks need to pay very close attention to these heat sinks like ovens and heat tape and things like that really consume a lot of electricity. I know that I went around and I changed all my bulbs in my home to compact fluorescent bulbs, and I also put my TV and DVR and so forth on a power strip, and it's turned off 22 hours a day. I only turn it on 2 hours a day. It's made a huge difference. It cut my electricity use in half.
Interesting.
So I think that those are things that people can do to guard their own usage.
And I want to get back to Sue Brogan again with the 2-1-1 system. And Sue, how do you have information on that also available to people through the 2-1-1 system on ways to conserve energy and be safe with their energy?
Well, we have done a couple of partnerships, and actually I talked to Mira about this earlier, with utility companies to, get information out through people, to people, like with bill stuffers and do that type of outreach, because that, I think, getting the information to the people that need it is what 2-1-1 does. So we just have a myriad of information that is available, and tomorrow actually is 2-1-1 day. Nationally and locally, and we've taken out print ads in many of the rural Alaska papers just to remind folks of the service that is available and to encourage them to call if they need information and talk through some of these issues. So to answer your question, we do, and it's not just in Anchorage information, but we have information from other utilities around the state as well.
Mm-hmm. And Carl Nostrand emailed in with a good idea that I know is being tried, I think, with the university's cold weather testing. Structures that have an R value of 50 or 60 require much less energy. Thin shell concrete homes and schools are a possibility. We need to manufacture green now with renewable energy. And some of those Experiments are going on now at the university level. I know in the past they have tried some experiments with rammed earth houses, trying to get back to old Eskimo technology, I guess. So there are a number of things being looked at, but just nothing right on the horizon. Sue, you wanted to add something?
I did. You know, when Juneau was having their challenges with the generation, with that whole power situation down there with the avalanche, the role that 211 played that we could offer back to that community was that single point of information to call for questions to be answered about what they should do and where they should go and how that's being handled. So that's another role that 211 played, is, again, that single point of information. So people didn't have to make 15 calls and be frustrated.
And one other thing also, just very recently we published a booklet on energy tips for rural Alaskans, and it was actually a joint effort at the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference and the Alaska Energy Authority, and we've had about 20,000 of those printed up, and so they are available now and are being sent out and should be blanketing the state, and they have very specific suggestions for rural Alaskans as to what you can do in your home and your business to reduce your energy use.
Okay, you are listening to Talk of Alaska. It is a live call-in program, 1-800-478-TALK, 1-800-478-8255. We're going to go to Two Rivers now. Lucy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. I grew up in that old Eskimo technology program.
Me too.
And I enjoyed it, and I, you know, it's hard work. But by golly, quite an interesting program. What I wanted to ask you is, what part do the corporations, do they have a role in any of these programs? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Are you talking about the Native corporations?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. And thanks for bringing that up, Lucy. And I just wanted to say one thing about that old Eskimo technology. At least you never have to wash the walls. Thank goodness. Anyway, that's a good question. And one I think that... NANA has dealt with recently. Full disclosure, I am a NANA shareholder. However, they are partners with Cominco, and as I said earlier, they've been making fuel available at the Red Dog site. So, and I know, as a matter of fact, that most corporations do, in emergency situations, leap in and provide some forms of cash. It's all different for every corporation, but. Mira, did you want to add something to that?
We've actually received funds from regional corporations, the CDQs, the regional corporations like NANA and Chelista and so forth. They do have individual assistance programs available for their shareholders. And so I would urge shareholders to contact their regional corporation and ask them if there's any help available. And I think you'd be surprised at how much help there is available when there is truly a need.
Mm-hmm. And the village corporations as well. And most of us know that corporations are there to make profits for their shareholders, but many of the Native corporations get thrust into this weird relationship where people expect and their shareholders say, we need help. So they usually ante up. We're going to go on now to quickly to Jimbo on line 8 in Klukwan. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. I'm going to add my sob story to the list and put my 10 cents in. Since the price of fuel went up, my 2 cents went to 10 cents. So.
Okay.
we're like 21 miles away from bulk fuel. We have it delivered when we can afford it. And we seem like my brother and I exhausted all avenues of heating fuel assistance, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned two things, 211 and ABAC. Is this a new program where we can seek more assistance, or just a study I didn't quite catch the beginning of the program? And to the sob story thing, I recently had to go to the bank and get a loan just to get my mother fuel. She took sick. I mean, she's contacted lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So she keeps her fuel, keeps her heat up constantly.
Yeah.
It runs probably 23 hours a day, her furnace. So she uses fuel at a very extensive rate, but we're keeping her, trying to keep her comfortable in her last days, so to speak. Now, when just last night we had to siphon some fuel out of my brother's tank here to take it down to her so she can have heat, but we seem to be running up against all kinds of stuff. Rate of unemployment here in the village of Cluckwan is quite high.
Yeah.
And mostly seasonal work since it's all tourism nowadays.
Yeah.
And the question I asked was about, I want to ask after my sub-store here was the 211 AVAC, and if there's more assistance available, I'll hang up and I thank you for your time.
I thank you for your call, Jimbo. I'm sorry to hear about your mother, and I know that taking care of people who are very ill in the village is difficult, and trying to make them comfortable is difficult as well. And your point about siphoning fuel, people are doing that all the time, and I know even people have been forced to turn to any means they can to keep their children warm or keep their children fed. Sue, 211 is not really a new program, but you have, like you were saying earlier, you have access to a lot of resources that you can pass on. But I wanted to move down to Joe and Juno and say, do you have any thoughts to add, Mr. Balash?
Well, just as to the situation faced by the individuals all across the state, we, you know, are challenged each and every day. Heart goes out to everybody who finds himself in a pinch. But as to the larger questions about infrastructure and the opportunities for keeping revenue in the local economies and communities, that is a big part of what we're trying to achieve here with the options that have been put forward by AEA and Steve Hagenson's group specifically. And, you know, with the use and reliance on local resources, there's an opportunity then to keep money in an economy and circulating and employing locals in the community. Those are unfortunately not quick and easy solutions, but they are ones that we want to keep our eye on and work with the various providers like AVEC to identify which ones can work and need to get underway and into production.
So it sounds like as far as rural Alaska is concerned, there is nothing on the horizon, no real help available except to work with the existing organizations. So people who are out there are just going to be out there?
Well, no, I think that when you consider what's been done over the last year in terms of the resource bonus that was distributed in September, the additional heating assistance program that was put into place by the legislature and funded then, we have various means available. We up to the limits that are available to the various communities and utilities for the bridge loans that are sometimes a part of the solution in making sure that assistance is available. As far as anything that is new, by the time you get action in this in the Capitol building, get funds appropriated and a program up and running, we're going to be well into spring, if not summer, before things like that can really be effective. So we think there's an opportunity to take advantage of the existing programs and funds that are available. We just need to do a better job of communicating those and informing the public.
Okay, you are listening to Talk of Alaska all along public radio stations throughout Alaska. That was Joe Balash, Special Assistant to Governor Palin. Today we're talking about the fuel cost squeeze in rural Alaska. We're going to take a quick break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP Alaska. BP is focused on the future, getting more oil out of Prudhoe Bay and bringing Alaska's gas to North America.
once again, welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are talking about the fuel cost squeeze in rural Alaska. And Sue Brogan, you had something that you wanted to add to what we were talking about.
I did. One of the challenges that we're working on right now, actually the developing a partnership with the state of Alaska, is around all of the grants that they issue. And the database for Alaska 211 is only as good as the data and keeping it updated. So if the when we get the state and some of the grantees to get on board with our with the project, they can keep their data updated. We can track the grants. So when there's new resources coming into communities, we'll know about that. Because, see, that's part of the problem we're facing right now. Mm-hmm. All of these things come and go, and we don't know.
Right.
If we know, then we can use that as a resource. So if we were written into that grant and the grant assurance language, then we would know when grants come and go, when money comes and goes, and that would be a huge help for the 211 and rural Alaska.
Well, hopefully some people out there in village offices and tribal offices have heard that and will either try to contact you or make some initial contact over that 211 and say, hey, this works. How can we get some access?
We would welcome that.
Okay, moving on now to Herman on line two over in Aniak. Welcome to the show, Herman.
Yeah, good morning. It's about 30 below here. We've had a cold winter. We burned a lot of stove oil, and one way to help us out here would be to give us access to some of that cheap natural gas. You know, they make these 500-gallon propane tanks, you know, mm-hmm. and if they were to, like, barge down the Yukon and do the ice road to truck it over to headwater like Crooked Creek and the Kuskokwim, you know,
mm-hmm.
And then they'd use the current to transport it, you know, and barges. If we had a 500-gallon propane tank, we'd be able to heat our homes, we'd be able to dry our clothes, we'd be able to cook. And that's it can be used to create cheap energy.
That's a good point, James. As a matter of fact, yeah, that's a good point. Someone actually did mention that to me the other day, and I was surprised that they said, "Yeah, they fill up one of those 500-pound bottles of propane, and that lasts a long time for almost everything in their house."
Also, you can convert these gas-powered vehicles to run on propane, or four-wheelers or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that technology out there. That'd be the answer, and that way people wouldn't need to spend so much money to heat their homes. They can spend on food and clothes.
Okay, Herman, I think you need to be in charge of some of these programs out there and get some good ideas going. Give Herman a job there. Miriam, what about AVEC? They're one of the big jobs in the community. Some people talked about, and you mentioned that you have combined some systems to save money, but doesn't that also mean loss of local jobs also? And that hits hard, too.
You're right. That's always you always have to make those choices. What happens though is even in a village where we no longer have a power plant, we still have an operator there that is in charge of the backup power plant over there and takes care of distribution issues in the community. So the job may be a little smaller than it was, but the job still exists. And the upside of that is we save at least a couple $100,000 for each power plant that we're able to shut down because we mm-hmm. no longer have to do overhauls. And, you know, that's where money leaves the town because we bring in expensive mechanics to do overhauls. And an overhaul costs $100,000 and you do one almost every year in every village.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't have to do that and you don't have people lube oil and bulk fuel storage and all those things, those are significant savings to the community and we'll use them some other way within the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those diesel plants are pretty expensive to maintain. All right, let's move on now to James in Bethel. Welcome to the show. Thanks for waiting, James. Are you still there? Okay, let's move on then to Homer and Chris on line three. Welcome to the show, Chris. Hello, Chris. Okay, sounds like these guys got tired of waiting. Sorry, we've had a lot of callers. Okay, Stu here in Anchorage over in Muldoon. Welcome to the show.
Okay, good morning, Nellie and Alaska. Just want to let everybody know I live in a sixplex, three-story, and I'm on the second floor. And when that guy moves out in the basement unit there, my heating cost goes up 30%.
Whoa. Yeah.
So I see all these pictures of the villages, and people are all spread out so they can have their nice privacy and stuff. But, you know, it's kind of noisy in a communal kind of setting. But, boy, I really wish somebody would move in the unit below. And I do wear bunny boots occasionally. It was 13 below when I got up this morning in Muldoon. But the other thing I was going to say is maybe you guys should start seeing if Hugo Chavez there likes smoked salmon. And start bartering with those guys, because if he's giving all that fuel away, just being nice and getting recognition and stuff, you know, if somebody, I bet they'd love smoked salmon down there in Venezuela. And maybe you could just do barter and cut the middle folks out completely.
Okay, Stu, you can have my job. What the heck? We'll give all the jobs away today. That's interesting because, Stu, that's correct. And I live in a house that where one of the bedrooms is built over the garage. And when it's cold outside and someone opens that big door, it gets cold in there. It's like, okay, no more opening the garage door after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But yes, that's a good point.
If you want to carry it to the extreme, you know, I was in Japan and they have those tube hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they really restrict the space and stuff. But if you want to live someplace and live warm and live cheaply, you know, you might want to look over there to Asia. They got some pretty good ideas, too.
And that's not the first time I've heard that. A friend of mine, Dan, lived over there for a year doing ESL, English as a Second Language, and that was his comment, was everybody lives very close together, parking is very restricted, not many people have cars, and everything is very restricted. You're right.
Yeah, and they heat their houses with gas from Cook Inlet, which we're going to be needing pretty soon here.
Okay. Joe, any hope for those gas lines and all those bullet lines and all the lines everybody's talking about at this point? Do we have any new news on that?
Well, the progress on the big pipeline continues to be made. It is a long-term undertaking and endeavor. Some of the smaller in-state projects, even those are world-class in terms of distance and cost. So looking in the shorter term, some of the potential sources of supply, including propane, you know, there may be opportunities where the infrastructure to capture the propane and put it into transport vessels. You know, those are things that the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority has looked at for some number of years and continues to work on and look at opportunities to make that a part of the mix.
Okay, I guess we're all going to be watching that closely. And also, wasn't there just recently TransCanada lost a bunch of permits and it's going to tie things up, slow things down a little bit?
I don't think that's the case. In fact, I think what may be happening is the opposite, that the old partnership that TransCanada was a part of, the Alaska Northwest Natural Gas Transportation Company, surrendered its right of way, and that was necessary to...
Yay, we're happy to hear that. Thank you for setting us straight. Our engineer, Gooseberry Peter, Len Anderson on phones, our producer, Duncan Moon. I'm your host, Nellie Moore. Thank you very much to Mira Kohler and Sue Brogan and for all of our callers today. I'm learning to talk really fast, and I'll see you again some other time when Steve Heimel's on vacation.
Thank you, Nellie.
Thank you, Nellie.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.